Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. It's all good. And we have a great show for you tonight at all. But there's something I wanted to mention up front. I don't know if you guys are aware of this.
Oh, boy.
But this is a big news.
Big confession. He's confessing to you, finally.
Oh, mm-hmm. Man. I murdered a man.
You've been taking the money and
giving
it to...
I murdered a man.
What have you been doing with the money, man? What happened?
Here's what happened with the money.
You gambled it away.
18 years ago, on December 5th, we started doing a comic book talk show called Comic Book Club live on stage. So it's not exactly 18 years tonight, but I figured it would be good to bring it up here at the top of the show, as this is technically our 18th anniversary show tonight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to make us feel old right at the top.
What's changed? Literally nothing.
Nothing.
It was perfect for the first moment.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, not much has changed in how we do the show, except for it's online rather than in person. But truly, the show has remarkably never changed.
Yeah. Is there anything should we change? Should we grow?
It feels like maybe that's what's been.
To be fair, I think Alex is feeling like the 18-year itch, because in the Patreon Slack, he's been saying, like, do we need to do anything different? What do you guys think? He's trying to, like, I like it. Pull the people.
Yeah, see what's I added a level on our Patreon to get me a sports car, because I think that's going to look very cool.
Uh-oh, midlife crisis alert.
I told Slack I was going to go out and log into another Slack for cigarettes, and I would be right back, and I will be.
Wow.
Wait, you're going to leave us for another Slack channel? That feels like that's the most deadbeat dad statement I've ever heard. Deadbeat
also,
middle
very
management
easy to
dad.
Find. He just clicked over to another window on the computer, but... Anyway, congratulations. Thank you guys for 18. Thank you for 18 amazing years. It has been a pleasure working with you. And it is nice to celebrate this, our final show.
This show can vote. This show can vote.
This show can vote. And I vote that we stop wasting time and bring in our two amazing guests this evening. They are classic creators. We've talked to them a bunch. They are awesome legends. And they are now working on Ghost Machines Hyde Street. Second issue is out now. The third issue is coming out in January. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Johns and Ivan Rice, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
Hey, hey.
How are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Thank you for coming on the show. Always a pleasure. Jeff, I just want to point out, I love your Ghost Machine hat. I love your Ghost Machine background. You're all tricked out. You got to go.
You're in the Ghost Machine.
You are the Ghost Machine.
He's a real Ghost Machine guy.
I am. I bleed yellow and black now.
Wow. Yes. And Ivan, I love your background as well. Don't get me wrong. It's also very, very nice.
Yeah. I mean, exposed brick, it's like having a ghost machine. If you're, it's hard to get.
Well, guys, let's talk about this. Before we even get into the book, though, I do want to talk about Ghost Machine. I think probably everybody listening or most folks listening know about it, but it's been a little over a year since the announcement, less than a year since you've been publishing comics, and you really came out of the gate swinging with a slew of titles. Jeff, maybe you can talk about sort of the MO behind Ghost Machine, what it is, what it's been like over the course of these 7, 8, 9 months, however long it's been at this point.
Sure. I mean, it kind of started back when Gary and I first, we were wrapping up Doomsday Clock, and Gary was like, I'm like, what do you want to work on next? And we had some ideas, but Gary really wanted to do something that wasn't superheroes. And Eric Stevenson had been asking me forever to do something in Image. And so we talked a lot about being fathers and like just life in general. And we came up with Geiger. And
Oh, wow.
We thought we'd do Geiger you know, as a, it's like, you know, how do you protect your kids in a world that's so toxic and messed up? And that's where it came from, that anxiety, I guess. And we came with Geiger, we pitched it to Image. They liked it. We published it. And then we had so much fun on it. We had plans to go back and do like another Batman Earth One or something. And we had so much fun on it. We just kept going. We did Junkyard Joe, which I really love that book. And, and then as we were doing that, we're talking to Brian Hitch and Ivan, and Ghost Machine kind of formed out of a desire to do something new and have more control over who we were working with and what we were working on, and doing things that quite honestly might have been hard for other publishers or Marvel or DC to publish, like Red Coat or Hyde Street. You know, it's not exactly like Ivan and I had a fight to do Aquaman because they wanted us to go do Batman all the time. They didn't want us to spend our time on characters they thought weren't as important. Wow. So we really pushed hard for that. I remember Aquaman 1 when Ivan and I did that, that scene in the restaurant was like our favorite scene. And we got a note from on high that that scene had to come out of the book. And it was because it made Aquaman look ineffectual. And that was kind of the point to it. And so we just wanted to, we started talking about how do we do this? And we were really inspired by the first generation creators at Image when they went away and did it, but we wanted to do it a little differently. So we came together, and there's about 24 of us in the company. We all co-own the company. We all co-own the characters, co-own the books together. And I think, you know, we curated a really special group of people. It goes beyond the talent, but the quality of people that are a part of this company is what makes this company great every day. And that's where it kind of all started.
Yeah. Ivan, what about you when you joined? What drew you to it in particular? I mean, Jeff touched on this a little bit, but I'd love to hear from your perspective.
Well, like Jeff was talking about, it's new, and the experience. I just listened to an interview with Brian Hitch, and he said it was like we went and we came from a cocoon. Do you know cocoon? The moon?
Yeah.
It's renewed us in a level I couldn't imagine that it would be possible. After years working with superheroes and creating mythologies and universe for other companies, I started to feel I was losing the energy.
Mm.
And now I'm feeling like the 13 years old Ivan again. With the same pleasure. And so happy for drawing. It's because it's not about to do a double page with 100 characters or create something for the others. It's our company. It's our characters. It's a real team. The feeling I had is, I know it's like a family. I know it's like I feel, because everybody, it's fighting for each other. We are pushing each other for the best. We inspire each other. Even the competition is a health competition, because we are not trying to do the best of the other. Not the point in this company. We are trying to do the best together. We are trying to do our best for everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm working with High Street only for me or only for Jeff. It's for everybody.
That's great.
I'm drawing for everybody. I'm drawing for Brian. I'm drawing for Gary, for Francis, for everybody. Because and I feel everybody's drawing for me. So I feel that's a real team. And the experience I had is, well, I'm back to the game. After years working with comics, I'm starting again. I'm back.
You recharged.
New challenge. Yeah, I charged completely, because I can see now I have the chance to bring back my reference. I feel I could bring back my influence and try, and well, that's it. I feel recharged completely.
And Ghost Machine makes you feel like a kid again. That's a tagline.
Like a kid again. Well, do you know, it's crazy because when I'm talking with Jack or with the others, and I feel I need to talk what I'm thinking about that. It's crazy because I start to think in Portuguese. I'm so excited about the things. I'm thinking Portuguese and I want to explain this in English at the same time. And it's crazy. So that's the best part. I'm not feeling I'm working for a company. I'm feeling I'm work like a teenager with my friends, my partner. So it's amazing. It's a important thing for an artist to find again his own motivation to bring his inspiration again, and not only to draw another page or another book again and again and again, and only try to find a different way to make a superhero flying. That is completely different. It's about you. It's about your experience. It's about what you make you an artist. And that's what I feel. I feel when I'm drawing a Ghost Machine book or when I'm drawing a variant cover for the other guys. So I feel part of the team, a real
that's
part
beautiful.
Of
beautiful.
That's really cool. I mean, it feels like, reading all the books, it feels like all of these comics, especially Hyde Street, want to go like further, faster. In improv, there's this idea of going A to C. Like, you don't need B. Everyone expects B. And it feels like all these books are like, oh, we're going to F immediately. Like, you guys are going hard. Is that part of it? Are these just ideas have been boiling for a long time?
I mean, if you analyze it like that, Justin, maybe. I don't think it's conscious for us. You know, High Street 3, like, right away we have this confrontation between the Boy Scout Pranky and Mr. X-Ray. And so, yeah, it would be C. I would say, like, you know, we jump right to C and then we go into G, right? Like, yeah. If you want to start getting technical, I mean, Redcoat certainly starts with W and then goes backwards. So,
right.
But you know, I'd echo what Ivan said is I've written obviously tons of superhero comics and I love them. Absolutely love them. I didn't realize how much fun I would have doing things that were original and also not nuts and bolts superheroes. Because things like Hyde Street, I get to explore different thematics and characters than I ever would have thought. A failed advertising executive as a lead character, I never thought I'd get inside that head, but I have, or a immortal Redcoat soldier. Any of these characters that we're exploring and like issue... You know, like issue 8 of Redcoat is about seeing like learning about like real evil for the first time, and issue 9 is about friendship. What it means
yeah.
to be friends. How important are friends? And Hyde Street does a similar thing. Each of these characters explores something that I don't think as a writer I've really been in an opportunity or let myself in an opportunity to explore. And so for me, writing these books, the reason they feel so different, at least to me, is that I'm able to do things and go places, you know, that are just different. Like Geiger is all about being a dad. It's that whole book is about the complexities of that, and the primal emotions on either end of, I say you're caught between sympathy and savagery all the time, and it's primal motivations with your kids. And so all these books, they're different, and it's an opportunity. I mean, I haven't written monthlies like this in a long time. I forgot. Oh my God, monthlies are the best because you can do all these different stories. You can get deeper into these characters. We can do we have this great, like Hyde Street number 4 is an issue about this, you know, this actor from 1949. And when you're working on a miniseries or events or anything like that, you don't get a chance to really delve deeper into these characters because you're so worried about wrapping up the story. You build it and then you have to crescendo it and end it. And this allows more of a a musical or improv, I guess, Justin, like you mentioned, an improv. Mm. It's like, oh, you know what? I really want to do an issue about Barney, the two-headed wolf. Like, just
yeah,
yes, please do more of that, please.
Yeah, encountering other mutant animals. Like, what is it like to be an outcast in a world of outcasts, and finding his bite again? Like, that was just about a and finding it not for yourself, for somebody else. That's what it was about. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you're beaten up, you got to get back up, but you're not doing it for you. You're getting back up because someone else needs you. And I thought that was really a great story to tell. And those were characters to tell it. And that's what I'm loving is Redcoat 7 is one of my favorite things I've ever written. Oh. And it's just two guys.
Yeah.
You know, one guy in a hospital bed, that's all it is. But it's really about everything. It's about life. And so for me, Ghost Machine is from A to Z. It's completely new. And that, I think, is what all of us feel. How we work, who we work with, what we're doing, why we're doing it. Everything's really bright. The colors are really bright.
It's really funny to hear you say it's just two guys talking. It's like it's a Revolutionary War soldier on the English side and Albert Einstein in the mid 20th century bedroom. You're like, it's just two guys talking. Yeah. There are some specifics that need to be attached to that.
But at the same time, it is two guys in a room for the most part. But I think it's a great issue. And the same thing with like the fact that we can have a Boy Scout be a lead character for 22 pages in High Street 2. Like it's
creepy.
I don't know. It's what's so that?
Creepy. Like a character freaks me out, man.
He had bad Boy Scout experiences.
I have nightmares about that kid.
If you hurt children, you should be worried about it. Yeah. But otherwise he's got his issues, but I understand where he's coming from.
I do want to talk specifics about Hyde Street in a second, but real quick, we had a comment here from Twitch. Bad Guys says, "More Junkyard Joe, please. Been loving virtually all the GM books. I won't press him on which ones he hasn't been liking, but are we going to see more Junkyard Joe?"
Junkyard Joe returns in Geiger number 10.
Yep. Nice. Great.
There you go.
Mezco just did a great action figure of him, but I think it's sold out already. But it's an awesome figure. They just came out.
Oh, cool. Really
nice.
He's a great guy. I love that story. And that story was about veterans, just a veteran coming home and trying to figure out what to do next. And that's what that story is really about. So again, that's why this is, for me as a writer, really exciting. And then I get to work with Ivan on, who I've loved working with forever since, Vision and Avengers.
Yeah. Most
people don't know that. We started at Marvel and for us to be able to create these crazy characters together and let our imaginations go wherever we want them to go. Like the characters in Hyde Street all came from us just talking or sketching or writing. It just came out of collaboration. And when you collaborate with people you love and respect, there's nothing better.
Yeah. I never felt so creative like now, and the chance to change ideas, and the most important is to see the books happening. It's like see your boy growing. So and in some moments you discover what will happen. You have a plan. You have A and to B, but what will happen between A and B? It's a surprise, like a kid. You don't know. It's pranky, for example. You never know what will happen.
Yeah.
And in some moments, I feel, and that's like I work. Sometimes I have a feeling about a situation, about a draw. And now I have the chance to put this feeling on a page. And doing this, we discover new scale from the characters. So and when I'm talking with Jeff, when we have the chance to talk about the characters, about the future, we always say it's like we are able to listen then talk with us. Yeah. In some level they are deciding the direction we should go. We have the plan, we have a goal, but they decide how that will happen because we are learning with them. They are growing with us. And I feel it's organic. It's a real organic. And for me, it's a specific, it's a special challenge because they are ordinary people. It's a weird guy and a boy, it's called a Scott boy, an old lady. I had the chance to draw ordinary people in superhero books. I love superhero books. It's important to know. I love that. Yeah, of course. It's 13 years drawing superheroes. But now, drawing ordinary people in superhero stories, it's only a moment of the story. Okay, because in some moment, the superhero will show up and will be the star of the book.
Mm.
But now, I need to develop these ordinary people. I need to make you to feel comfortable reading and seeing them. I need to create a connection with these characters and ordinary people, ordinary place. And that is really special because you need to exercise different muscles. And that's the best part, like Jeff said. Really important for an artist because I never saw myself drawing these situations, and this is amazing.
Yeah.
Not to jump off of what Justin's saying, you're talking about ordinary people in ordinary places, but that's not exactly what's going on in Hyde Street. why don't we set up the premise here just for anybody who hasn't read the book? So basically you have the titular street, you have this place, Hyde Street, and as far as I understand it from reading it over the first two issues, you have all these characters like Mr. X-Ray and Pranky, we've mentioned a couple of times. There's a Cub Scout. There's a couple of others. There's been a one-shot called Devour where we got to see, I wouldn't call it a health food store. It's certainly not that. It's whatever the opposite is. But the way that I see it is it's almost like if you took a bunch of horror hosts and mashed them up together on one street, interacting with people, what would happen? And then you're also giving it an overarching mythology at the same time, which I thought was really fascinating. I was expecting a little bit more of a anthology style book, but we really are building something bigger here. What did it start with, Jeff? Was it just trying to do an anthology horror book?
No, not at all. Actually, it's, you know what it started with is Ivan and I talking about the type of book we wanted to do, and I had mentioned just horror because I'd always loved horror, and Ivan was like, I started in horror comic books, and we got really excited about the idea, and so I talked about the stuff I loved. I remember being sick as a kid and staying home, and this show came on called Twilight Zone, and I'm like, what is this show? It was amazing, and I watched all the episodes, and I remember after work I used to watch Tales from the Crypt on HBO at 2 in the morning, and
of course.
I love that. I love the old horror books. I loved watching Universal Monster horror movies. I love Black Mirror. So I loved all these kind of anthology horror spaces, like all those great shows and books and everything else. But what I love writing are characters. I love writing characters, and I just thought about it's interesting you say like a bunch of horror hosts, and I guess maybe some of them could be, yeah. But my thought was more like I'd like to go to a place where we have reoccurring characters because we've seen, you know, people and they end up like Tales from the Crypt or they go through an experience, and that definitely is part of the book. But there's a reason for it all. There's a reason behind it all. A very emotional character reason. And I love that cover. And
so good.
so fun. And so the idea is, well, it kind of feels like it could be an anthology. In some ways it is, but really it's a serialized story about these people from different times that are trapped here and forced to deliver souls to some person or entity or being that is overseeing this place called Hyde Street. And each one of these characters that is there has a different story, a different motivation, a different perspective. And they have to interact, and we see more of that interaction in issue 3 with Mr. X-Ray and Pranky. So that's where it came from. I love like shows like Lost that have all these characters that have different backstories. When you see that kind of scoreboard type visual on the last page of issue one. There's a list of characters there, and we'll come to see that they're all from different decades, and we'll come to see why they're chosen and what they do there, and what all their stories are and how they interact. And there's a much bigger story behind all of it, but it's a very slow rollout because this is a character-centered book. And Ivan and I have done mythologies, and we've done characters, we've done spectacle, and that is in this, but it's really focused on people and people who've made choices in their life that maybe weren't so great, and what the consequences of those choices are and how to face those choices. And so that's where it came from and grew from. And it's that's why it's fun to write. It's kind of endless for me to write because of all these different characters.
That's why we are able to create a connection with the book, because we could be a resident on Wright Street. We could make bad decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're going to see people like issue two. I love because it's a serial killer, and Frankie's like another one. Like, but you could park in a handicapped spot and you could get out and end up on Hyde Street. Like there, you can get on Hyde Street very, very easily. You can make a purposeful choice. That's not a good choice. That's it. And it can be very, very small. And you'll see some people that are there that you might think, well, do they belong there? And then you'll see people who, of course, they belong there. And some people find their way there very easily and some don't. And that's all part of what the mythology of Hyde Street is. And again, the analysis of kind of what's bad, what is bad. It's all a little relative. Like what's really bad, what's bad, and what does that mean if you make a bad choice?
It also feels like it's rooted in some Americana or retro. Feels like the characters are tinged with that. The art as well feels like it. There, in the second issue, there's a strong panel that flashes back to some 20th century art. Is that what part of what you're exploring here as well?
Well, when you have a character like Pranky's from 1955 and X-Ray's from 1966, you're going to have that feel. So yeah. That's a great image there. You're going to have that feel with these characters. When we get to some of the other characters, they'll feel a little more, maybe more from today. Some will feel really from you know, decades and decades ago. But there's probably a bit of kind of Americana or horror Americana throughout this whole thing in different ways. And you'll see that in issue four, we take on kind of some 40s monster films, like the early monster movies, and the main character is connected to those, and we'll see kind of Hollywood in 1949, and one of the characters is from that. But yeah, I would say so. Like one of the things that makes this so fun to work on is that it's been around for a long, long time, and some of these people have been there a long, long time, and sometimes like a Boy Scout from 1955 can kind of be creepy, right?
Yeah, I think so. I would say yes.
An advertising executive from 1966 can just be a little off-putting.
There's darkness there.
Yeah, there's something to him. And those X-ray glasses that are stuck on his head, there's a reason he doesn't take them off. But anyway.
Real quick, I have a couple of other questions about Hyde Street, but before I forget, every week on the show, and this is true, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris. He has a restaurant named Shift that you got to check out down there. He either creates or curates a cocktail for us, and this week he created... Ooh, wait, here it didn't come up. There we go. The Pranky.
He created cocktail. I need this for sure. I 100% need this because I'm going to make it and drink it.
Excellent. We will send it your way.
Please do.
Absinthe, bourbon, Aperol, lemon juice, simple syrup, orange bitters, and lemon peel. Wow, you put it in a cocktail glass, and it's a little tricky and a little dangerous, but... Very, very good.
This is so it is. Cool.
The absinthe is a real Boy Scout fucking up the drink, if you know what I'm talking about. And it's very good.
Ooh, did you make one, Justin?
Oh, you made one?
I nice. Got one. That's so cool.
Awesome. I did. Well, there you go. That's the Pranky. But talking about that, you do start off, like we've been talking about, with Mr. X-Ray and Pranky given that you do have all of these other characters on the roster, why were they the right two characters to kick off the series with?
They're kind of a yin and yang in their approaches to all of this, and their reasons for continuing to do this. Visually, they're very different. And I was drawn to them as characters, as the writer. We have a lot of different characters, but for me, kind of the delightful, seemingly chaotic nature of a young boy and the more reserved, thoughtful, manipulative, stoic presence of this adult male. And he has a problem with kids. Clearly, he was an absent father. And Frankie obviously has a problem with adults or grownups.
Yeah.
Because they're always telling them what to do. And he's kind of right. Right. Like just because. So there's a power dynamic, I think, between an adult and a child that I thought was really interesting. And especially with their backgrounds, given their, and you'll see more of it as we go on, but given, because it's obviously in my head, but given their emotional backstories and their histories and who they are and what they want, they're perfect foils for one another. And issue 3 delves into that even more. And Ivan draws the hell out of them. I love watching them together and seeing them in the same panel. They just look interesting. They're interesting to watch and listen to. And also their voices for me are really interesting. As I was writing all these characters out and building them out, those two, they just stuck out as two that would probably have the most tension or some of the most tension among all the residents of Hyde Street.
Ivan, when you're drawing Pranky, as we've already established, Pete is pretty freaked out about him. We were showing off a page here for anybody who's listening, just drenched in blood from the first issue. Does that freak you out that you're drawing a child who is doing all these absolutely awful things?
Well, Pranky is my biggest challenge drawing. It's amazing, but he's a boy. It's when you see him, you say, okay, he's a nice boy. And find the balance. Yeah, it's a nice boy when you see him. So, but he has another side of his. We know he's not good. And to find the line between the nice and the scary is the challenge. Because I need to make you feel uncomfortable seeing him. Because the story is not about gore or blood. And it's an emotional story. It's about what you feel reading that. So you can't feel comfortable seeing Pranky. So when I'm drawing him and I start like a nice boy, sometimes I start to change the lines of eyes or something to see. I say, this is weird. It's not, I don't know. It's because I try to bring feelings and to make you feel uncomfortable. Like that guy see a frame in a wall and the frame is not perfect. Yeah. You need to fix that because you feel uncomfortable seeing that.
You do that really well.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And that's what I try to do with Pranky.
Yeah,
because you're killing it.
Too much energy. He doesn't stop. He's always in movement. He's a chaos. He's always in movement. He's always talking.
Yeah, in my mind, he's like a little rascal, like gone wrong.
Yeah. Dennis the Menace.
And what I try is when he's to keep the face. A beautiful face, the kid face, he needs pen energy. When he's missing the control of himself, or because he's so excited, or because he's wanting to do something really cool, he starts to lose the control about himself.
Oh, right.
And that's why he starts to look weird. The eyes start to go for here, and the mouth starts to, he's losing the control, not because he's angry, but because he has so many energy. He can't control it with himself.
Wow. What is like all Boy Scouts.
What is completely different with Mr. X? Mr. X, it's under control. He's always in control, try to understand what has happened. He's not happy to be on High Street. Prank is happy to be on High Street, but Mr. X is not. So he's always watching, always with the hands in a pocket. So always fixing the glasses because he's keeping the control. He doesn't have too many movements. Only when you see them together, Prank and Mr. X, you can feel the different energy.
Yeah, the comparison.
Yeah, you can compare it. That's the my idea when I'm doing Pranky. I want make him missing the control, make you noticing that, but feeling uncomfortable with that. Not yeah. feeling happy. You start to like him, but you start, okay, I'm liking him. I'm feeling uncomfortable for liking him. Because it's emotional. I'm trying to bring these feelings. So
yeah. Well, it definitely
comes across.
That's why
I don't break the panels. That's why I always keep panels almost with the same size because I don't want to break the sequence of reading.
That's cool.
I don't want to change your attention. So I try to keep the things happening in
composed.
Sequence to keep you watching. And then I show you the weird moments. So.
Yeah. We do have a couple of questions here piled up in the comments, so I do want to get to some of those, if that's all right. Legion of Comics, says, can we be expecting a protagonist to enter Hyde Street?
They might not last very long, but sure you can.
Fair.
Oh, wow.
Broader question, not necessarily about Hyde Street. This is from Tamar Adar, says, after 2+ decades part of DC, curious if Jeff and Ivan are able to enjoy new DC stuff as fans or if it's weird.
You know, I usually check out stuff by writers I love. So, like, I love Jeff Lemire. I love Jeremy Adams. So, yeah, but I go by writer.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah. Let's see. There was another one here that I missed. Oh, this is Legion of Comics again. Clearly, pun intended, the Invisible Man has entered the world of the unnamed. Will we be seeing any more classic characters added to the mix?
They're all, well, you'll see. I mean, it's funny because we have in the unnamed universe and like Red Coat, like issue 9 is him and Johnny Appleseed. Mm-hmm. You know, and issue 10 is Annie Oakley. One of the things that's really fun about Red Coat is these characters who are, you know, real people, but you don't know their personalities so well. Like, we know what Johnny Appleseed did, but what was he like, really? What was...
Yeah, that's a weird thing to do for life.
Yeah, what was Benedict Arnold like? Why did they do what they did? And that's what makes it really fun, is that we have the facts behind them and but not all of the personality. And so, yes, you'll see. They'll interact with, you know, new characters like the Northerner that are from, you know, we created, and then people that are in the in history.
Yeah. That makes me want to ask, you have a pretty clear timeline in the books. Like, does that – so everything relates to each other. Does that mean we're going to get some crossover here in the near or far future?
Well, with the unnamed, like Red Coat and Geiger and Junkyard Joe, there's that timeline in the back. You know, the unnamed history starts with the American Revolution, the beginning of America, the birth of America with Red Coat, and it ends with 25 years after the destruction of America. So it's from the beginning to the end. And all these other characters fit in between. And for me, the idea of the unnamed came from, I used to love, you know, like Paul Bunyan and John Henry and Pecos Bill, all these cool, like American myths. And I wanted to create the unnamed, the ones you didn't know, like Red Coat and Junkyard Joe and Geiger and the Northerner. And there's a few others in there that we'll be slowly introducing. But again, it's, you know, it's not a rush to have everybody cross over and meet. Although obviously we've already seen some of the ties between the books, yeah. Geiger and Red Coat at least.
I mean, similarly, for anybody who doesn't know, with Ghost Machine, you've got four universes, right? You've got the unnamed universe that we were just talking about, Hyde Street that we've been talking about, Rook Exodus, yeah. And you got Family Odysseys. I was surprised to see you all put out a promo from Rockefeller's issue number 2, where we kind of get to see the Ghost Machine multiverse. We get to see it sort of little shots of it. We don't necessarily know the context, but why was now the right time to start bringing that together in any fashion?
Well, just, you know, we call it the four corners of reality. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not out to tell multiverse stories about different versions of Pranky all over the place. Like, we don't want to do that. Like, when you read Rook Exodus, you're reading Rook Exodus. That's all you're going to ever need to read. That's our science fiction, really kind of hard science fiction. And the reason we developed these into what they were is because the genre dictated it, and we wanted freedom on the creative. So, you know, we had a horror kind of genre that we wanted to tackle, and it all fit into Hyde Street. We had a science fiction thing, and that was Rook, and we had, you know, action adventures, kind of superhero adjacent with the unnamed, and then Family Odysseys are stories that are more focused on families. And we wanted, really, you know, all of us together decided that, like, it'd be nice to have, like, Rockefellers and Hornsby and Halo are in the same, you know, universe. They you know, the Rockefellers probably will go on vacation and travel through Warwick and meet Hornsby and Halo at some point. But the motivation for that was for creative freedom and clarity, because there's, you know, Rooks in the future, Geigers in the future, Rockefellers are in the future, and our motivation for all these is great comic books. I remember reading the Vertigo comics when they first came out. I loved Shade the Changing Man and Animal Man and Doom Patrol, and although they kind of coexisted, they were their own specific books. And that's really another inspiration, is letting these books be great on their own. If there's some connectivity, it's organic and natural, and will build in a way that, you know, helps enhance character and story. I think too often now people, they reverse engineer what they think a publishing plan should be, and I put that in quotes. Build to a crossover, then you do solo books, yeah. And you build to a crossover, and you relaunch, and you relaunch, and you reboot, and it just, for us, you know, it was just not what we wanted to do. We wanted to focus on character first, and so every decision we've made, every single one, is protecting that character, protecting that story, and protecting that tone.
It's funny you mentioned Vertigo, and when those books did cross over in the Children's Crusade, I want to say, mm-hmm. I was always like, when I read that as a kid, I was like, this is weird. How do they know each other? Yeah, it felt a little out of sorts, but like, that's why I appreciate what you're saying about like all the stories being in their own pocket. But
well, I want every book, when we sat down to talk about what we wanted to do, you know, this thing behind me, I used to get out at the, when Nisi was in New York, I'd get out of the elevator and it'd open up on the floor and you'd see these, I don't know if you guys have been there, you'd see this mural of all these characters. Yes. And I was like, who are, like, and I knew most of them, but there were a few in there I didn't know. And I was like, this is so cool. And when we started this company, we started talking about creative, we're like, we're about characters. Because characters are story. Like, people are, like, there's too many, in my opinion, things that are, if they're ongoing, that are, they're not focused on character, focused on concept, and character drives story, emotion drives story. That's what I'm interested in. So we were like, let's create characters, stories that we want to tell through character. And that's where this started. And then it's expanded since. And and we always were very like, what makes the most sense creatively? What do we want to see? What do we want to do? And that's where we came up with the four different corners. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about what we wanted to do creatively, and it was very organic, but I think very carefully decided, you know, among us.
You are doing titles in three of the four universes, which, don't get me wrong, that's a lot. It's a lot of books, but Family Odysseys is the one universe you're not currently announced to be doing something in, and that almost feels like the most obvious fit for you to do a title in. Why not Family Odysseys?
Well, I'm writing four books. you know, it was just organically where it happened, and Pete and Francis were doing Rockefellers. You know, Pete did such a great job on Super Sons and Batman and Robin, Superman.
Oh yeah,
and great. Family is just something he gravitated towards, and he and Peter Schneeberg came up with Hornsby and Halo, and it just was a natural fit. So it wasn't intentional. It was just, again, what seemed natural. You know, like I love that tone. Like there's a lot of warmth and humor. But even in Hyde Street, as dark as it is, I'm not good at cynicism. I just don't believe in cynicism. I think I just can't embrace cynicism. So even in the darkest of stories or books, I still find, you know, I still find the purpose or the reason to keep going. I feel like all the books have their own thematic and tone, but it was just organic.
Yeah. This is getting very granular, but this is something that we talked about on our review podcast. So I'm curious to hear from you. In terms of the publishing plan, you had one issue of Hyde Street, and then you had the Devour one shot come out, and then issue two of Hyde Street, which was surprising to me, not necessarily unwelcome, but you'd expect, you know, okay, we get 6-12 issues of Hyde Street and then there's a one shot. Why did Devour come where it did?
Maytal came with a great story that she wanted to tell, a very personal story. I think a very unique story to comic books. Layla drew it wonderfully, and it was ready, and it felt great to tell a story from the point of view of one of the victims who finds himself strolling onto Hyde Street. And so it just naturally was like, oh, this is going to be great. Well, let's put it out after issue one.
Yeah.
And that was it, because it's a cool standalone story. And it's a good comic book. And I'm really proud of Maytal. I think she's a great writer.
Yeah.
I love how simple that explanation is. It's like, we had a good story, so we published it. Even if it felt like a strange time to do it. Let's go.
It was great. And you do have another one-shot coming, The Soulless, right? Is that still in the plans?
That's later next year, and that's actually a miniseries.
Oh, okay. Mm. Related, while we're talking about publishing plans, we got another question here from the comics. This is CW123 says, is Hyde Street going 50-plus issues?
Wow.
You just released number two, so tell us 50-plus right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have a story for that, yes. I mean, it's funny because Brian and I Ivan and I already have, for Hyde Street, we already have over probably 35 issues of story already plotted.
Wow.
But
that's crazy.
I mean, with Red Coat, I know Brian and I are on 70, 75. And we know the ending, eventually, but I'm just saying we have all these stories, and because every time we get together, we do more and more. But Hyde Street, I think, you know, that'll go as long as we have a story to tell, but we have so many characters. It's an ongoing book. And I don't see us having any trouble. I've been on titles for, you know, 100 issues, a decade. And we have, these are long form stories and we have a lot of story to tell. Like, I'm excited for these stories to just keep going and going and going. Like, my goal is to just keep writing Hyde Street and Red Coat and Geiger and Rook. I'm so happy doing that.
Did time to create a connection with the reader.
Yeah, you need time.
One way to create this connection, stay in the book for a long time.
Yeah, and long consistency.
It's the only way. The reader needs to feel comfortable to back in the next month to buy the book and again and again and again. And the only way to do this is to have a lot of books and to make a big run with these characters and stay with them. And the reader can feel your dedication for the long story. And we don't have it anymore in the market. We have few teams doing long, long runs.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be weird when Geiger has a higher issue number than Superman. You know, like that's going to be a weird thing. But I think at some point we will. I really believe in the reason we're doing this, because we believe in these stories. We're not out here to do 6 issues and then move on to the next thing and then do another 6, another 4, another 3. We're here because we want to tell these stories with these characters. That's what serialized comic books are. And we got together to do this. This is why we're doing this. And it's more fun than we even thought it would be. So,
Yeah, if there's a big board in issue one, there's a bigger board in issue 15, and then the biggest board.
The biggest board. Well, it's really more about the characters and the relationships, but yes.
Yeah, and we did that with Green Lantern. We did a long run, and we were creating a mythology and growing the story until the moment that exploded in a special moment. And that's it. It was able because we create this connection during this time. So telling good story, loving that, and the most important, loving that story, not only doing a story, but we really feel we are doing our best.
Yes.
And the reader can see that and enjoy this adventure.
And like we know we know what story we're telling with High Street, the overall story of the whole thing. That story is already, we already know that whole story, but going through that whole story, you have all these other places to explore, all these other characters that start to pop up, and these stories that just give it more and more texture and depth. And that's what we're doing with all the books we're doing. You know, you're not going to see like, I don't know, I guess it's funny because I guess, I don't know when the last like era was where we had these really, really long runs, but I miss those long runs. You know, and I think creators miss them too.
As readers, we still talk about those runs. Those are the runs just like, well, of course, back in Claremont's X-Men, because I feel like those are the ones that had enough mythology that is continue to be drawn from.
I was just talking to someone about X-Men today, and we were talking about how, like, you know, there's only a handful of writers that have had monumental runs on X-Men, and you can count them on one hand. You know, which says something. You're like, how many great runs have there been in Iron Man? How many great runs have there been in Captain America or, you know, Aquaman or whatever? There's not a lot in any of these books, and they've been around for a long, long time. But nowadays, you know, you're lucky if you get 6 issues or 12 issues or 24 issues. 24 is like, oh my God, that runs so long. And it's not like you do need some, no pun intended, you need some runway to really flesh these things out and find places that you weren't expecting or that, you know, that just enhance the whole experience. And I think, again, these single issues that pop up, like Redcoat 7 wouldn't have existed in the miniseries. Geiger 6 with Barney wouldn't have existed in a miniseries. Hyde Street 4 wouldn't have existed in a miniseries. Like, they just wouldn't.
Well, and to bring it all the way back, like one of the reasons I love
for High Street.
Yeah.
One of the yes, that much is obvious. It's turned you into a boy again. You must have a vision. What I was going to say is like the A to C thing. Like I read comics because it is one of the only mediums that feels like it pushes on the borders of the walls of the medium constantly. Totally. And it takes time to get there. It takes time to be able to, like, I've established enough, now I'm gonna make the weird choice. And it's so much harder to see those fun weird choices in anything we consume now.
I agree. That's why Hyde Street, like, issue 3 is not at all what people will expect, and it is, I don't even know if it's C, it might be G, it might be deeper, like, because it isn't, because once you're like, okay, there's people here and there's people here and they damn souls. Well, yeah, you got it. Now, we're into like crazy stories now because you get the we've all watched or read Tales from the Crypt. It's not about that. It's about much more than that.
Yeah.
And surprising people is a huge thing for us. And it's just trying to tell stories and get to the story. Like, don't spend time just treading water. Get to the story.
Yeah. Cool. It's great. We only have another couple of minutes with you, so I want to hit you with one or two quick questions from the comments here. This is from Matt Garcia. Has your team ever talked about switching teams for one-off issues similar to how the Image Founders?
We have. That's been talked about since day one.
That's, you know, so funny.
Every New York Comic Con, we have a summit. We actually did one in secret last year. Before the con, we did another one this year. We all fly out from all over the world on that Monday and spend the whole week together. It's a blast. And that's come up twice now. We will probably eventually do that after we have our books really established. We really want to get our books established and get our, you know, and make sure that we've got that. But I think people, you know, one of the reasons, another reason, Alex, we did that spread in Rockefellers too, is just to, again, remind people we're a team. Mm-hmm. To have every artist work in the same book on that spread. And it's as much about, you know, as much about displaying kind of the four corners of reality to clarify that for anyone that wants it, as having a reminder that we're a team. All of us are a team. And having a jam piece like that says it, you know.
Yeah. Cool. And this one is from Leonard Pig. If you could adapt any one of your current projects, which one would be first, and what medium would you choose, live action or animated?
I mean, they'd all be great. Whatever, organically, whatever would happen the most. They're all super fun. But again, like our just, you know, of course, we all hope that something happens like that with our characters and our stories. But these are first their series, they're ongoing books. It's important to make great comic books, not pitch documents.
Yeah. Nice. I love to hear that. Just to wrap it up and bring it back to Hyde Street again, I know we've gotten some teases already for what's coming forward, but again, issue 3 is coming out, I believe, January 22nd, 2025. Wow, that is coming up very soon. What can you tease about the issue, as it is going to be very
Alex
different?
Alex shocked by the date.
Yeah, Alex taking a moment to be like,
I'm still putting 2023 on my podcast.
Issue 3 is Pranky reluctantly goes to Mr. X-Ray to help him learn how to deliver souls better to this organ. Oh. And so these two team up to take on a thief who does some pretty bad stuff. But we see some surprising turns from both of them, and introduce another character that plays a big role in Hyde Street that's already been kind of seen in the background. But and then issue 4 will focus on a character called the Matinee Monster that is a really important and pivotal character on Hyde Street, unlike any of the other residents. And then issue 5 we'll see Miss Goodbody, who was in Devour, and Mr. X-Ray. And then we continue on. Ivan's doing a cover for issue 7 right now. I don't want to spoil it, but it's a really funny image. If you like Pranky, you'll like it. But we'll start to delve more and more to the other residents as we meet more of them, and we uncover the secrets behind how Hyde Street works and why it's there.
Oh, man. Awesome.
Awesome.
Guys, this book is great so far. I can't wait for it to continue to scare the bejesus out of Pete and also read it. Congratulations on everything. Great seeing you. Great talking to you.
Congratulations.
I love everything that's going on. Thanks, guys.
Later, guys. Day 13, Ivan. Good luck with puberty.
All right. Once again, the book is called Hyde Street. As I mentioned, Hyde Street number 3 is coming out January 22nd, 2025 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics. And then there's also Red Coat, we mentioned, Geiger, Rook Exodus, Family Odyssey's title, all of that, all awesome stuff. Check it out. Check them all out.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. I'll give a glance at Instagram as well.
I got a question.
Ooh, Pete has a question. Is it, does it still feel like year one, Pete? Yes, it does.
Does it really?
Feels like the first time.
It's always the first time. Wow. I was going to pull out that classic Kevin Smith tweet about his wife today to read to you.
Oh, sick. That would be awesome.
Yeah, Pete wouldn't like
just email that to us. Yeah, Pete would.
I did look it up, and I was like, no, this is too much for me to even say on the show.
Wow. Yeah, agreed. To put those words out into the world was shocking for him.
Now I
and
got it.
You I'll being like, this is a good idea. Yeah,
just look up Kevin Smith taint tweet, and you'll
oh, wow.
You know, Alex, I feel like at 18, you still can surprise me. At least. when you say, like, when you're dropping the Kevin Smith wife tweet as an idea you had
earlier today.
Great stuff.
Pete, what's your question? What's your question, Pete?
Yeah, Justin, congrats on being alive. People in the comments are like, hey, Justin's, he made it. He's alive. Or what happened, dude? You okay?
I don't know. Why do people think I'm not alive?
Did something happen over Thanksgiving? Did you lose power? Did you almost die?
I should say we went away for Thanksgiving with my wife's family, and we were in the Catskills. It snowed. The internet went out, and there's no cell service. So it was true radio silence for a full 24 hours.
Wow. What did you have, like candles going? Like, how did you...
I will say, no, we had electricity, and I was upset because I wanted to watch some of the National Football League games, and nothing is working through the internet. But
missed a hell of a Bills game, man.
I watched the shit out of that game. That was awesome. The Airbnb had a satellite dish, and I figured out how to get it working. I watched that football.
Wow.
It was a real
and scrappy real quick, game. Which of your kids did you eat?
Yeah.
I mean, technically both of them. We just chose not to eat one full kid, but take bites out of each of them.
That's smart. Go, man.
Smart.
Yeah, save that's using the whole buffalo.
Buffalo Bills. Schreckler says, if you could say anything to your younger self besides run, what would you say?
I would say if you ever meet an Alex or a Justin, run.
Yeah, well, that's what Schreckler said.
A very specific thing, but I would say, hey, reserve comicbookclub.com, not comicbookclublive.com.
Wow. Alex, surely there's one other thing.
Nope, that's my only regret in life.
Wow.
I will say, I'm sure it bothers you every week for 18 years when you have to say comicbookclublive.com. So I think that is something that might actually enrich your life in a real positive way.
Yeah.
I would say, personally, grow the beard earlier.
Wow.
And I will say, I'm going to have to shave this month for the Charlie Brown Christmas Live. If you're in Brooklyn, we are doing the Charlie Brown Christmas Live again this year.
Nice. That's fun.
It's the weekend right before Christmas. Please come out. It's very fun. But I'm going to have to shave it down to play Charlie Brown. And that's going to be weird.
I work on the dance moves.
Pete, anything you'd say or just you already said it? Stay away from us. Okay. Dar says, it being your 18th anniversary, I'd love to hear your fave moments from the live show over the years. Can we do this without playing the hits?
Well, that's the problem. Yeah, exactly.
We can say the ones we always say, but let's dig a little deeper. I mean, I know I say this one a lot specifically. But when Pete revealed that he had been running a secret quiz in his own mind for 5 years, I will never forget that moment in my entire life. If my brain fails and it's erased, that will be my last thought. Is like, he had something in his puncher slipper the whole time? Huh. Die. I will die after those words. So that's a moment.
Die. Here's a moment for the live show that I think about every time I go on LinkedIn is the woman who stood up during audience questions and was like, Alex, there's something I need to, I don't remember exactly the words, but she was like, I have a bone to pick with you. There's something I need to say. There's something I need to reveal right now. And I was like, sweating there, being like, oh my god, what did I do, or what did you think I did?
This is pre-cancel culture, I think, 100%. But this is like, Alex is like, I'm about to be canceled.
100%. I don't know why, I've never met this person in my life, this is terrifying. And it turned out she had hit me up on LinkedIn about a job that I was hiring for, and I hadn't gotten back to her because I never check LinkedIn, and that's not how you communicate with people. And she decided the best way to do it was confront me live at our comedy show.
I mean, shouts to that stick-to-itiveness. And now she's your personal assistant, right?
We're married. We have two kids, and we've eaten half of them.
What a beautiful... See, wow. You made the wrong choice on the eating kids front. Mm-hmm. Pete, you got a mem?
Yeah, I gotta say, for me, it was like some real like moments that I'm kind of reliving, like the piano shows when we were throwing out beers to the crowd, and it was just like
those
packed.
Shows that we did as a Nerdist television show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yeah. Like that first phone call when we got from, the big guy there, Chris Harper, we're all like kind of like huddled in a basement in the pit, like on speakerphone. That was pretty badass. And Fontana's, man, we had a blast in Fontana's, like some crazy nights. Like,
I got to give a shout out to the bartender at Fontana's who would after a while, just give us shots. And he was like, well, I'm the afternoon bartender here, so I want some tips.
The bartender was also a bouncer when it got like busy.
Hell yeah.
Just like great conversations we've had with people, guests, fans.
Stray Bullet in the comments sounded, what do you got, comic book aprons? Yes, Stray Bullet made us aprons.
Oh, wow, that was a fun one. That was a great picture from that show.
Yes, I've been promising Stray Bullet I would get mine out of my basement, which I haven't done. And he also says, oh man, the near-death cookies, when Pete got cookies ordered for him and ate so many that he legitimately almost...
I got addicted to 4th Street cookies in Philadelphia. Later, ended up living in Philadelphia and wouldn't allow myself to go anywhere near that cookie place because I had a problem.
There's a little more to that story, but I know you
don't. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for holding that back.
Street Bullet does have a question, though. Are you guys excited for Fan Expo in New Orleans in January? Sure are. We are going to be at Brew Carré in New Orleans Friday, January 10th at 8 p.m. It's a free show. You can buy some beer, buy some delicious food from Shift upstairs, and we're going to tape a show. And then the next day, we will be at New Orleans, at Fan Expo New Orleans. So we'll be doing another taping there. But definitely come to the Brew Carré one for sure.
We haven't all been on vacation together since the Comic-Con on the cruise ship.
Oh, boy.
And that got wild
That got real crazy.
So I will say I'm definitely looking forward to coming down to NOLA for that time.
Oh, man, yeah.
Oh, got a great question here from Nat Towson. What are some of your favorite Nat Towson moments from the years?
It's funny because I was thinking of some Nat Towson moments, but I was like, I don't want to play the hits because for me, the water challenge that we did, the
ice bucket challenge.
Ice bucket challenge with Nat was one of my favorite memories, but I've said that before, so I didn't want to repeat myself.
I mean, Nat is become a great friend over the years doing this show, so shouts to that. But I think I was there when the punch of the stomach was was established, and I was there when it occurred.
Yeah, so it happened.
Shouts
that took
to that
years to make
4-year journey. Or
yeah, yeah.
Bandito 740 says, "Remember trying to get Pete to take off his belt, and then COVID happened." I don't remember that. Is that?
I have a vague memory of this, of a live show where Pete was wearing a belt that we wanted him to take off, and I think it was, I can't remember what the idea was, but it was vaguely sexual, I think.
Yeah.
We were going to take his belt off, or Alex, I think you were going to take his belt off live on stage, and then COVID happened.
That's right. Yes, it caused COVID. Sorry about all the COVID, everybody. Well, there we go. Thank you for all of the questions, everybody. Thank you for... Yes, what's up?
Schoikler says, I've said it before, but I found the podcast when Nat mentioned that he was guest hosting. That's hilarious. You never know how you're going to end up in a place. And Nat has guest hosted multiple times over the years.
Michael Tillman.
All right. We are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Sexual LePage.
Oh, boy. That got weird fast. All right. Thank you. Yeah, this is part of the show. We give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you want to go to a comic book shop. I mean, come on. So all we need is a brave volunteer and... you will win $25.
Yep. All you have to do is say me in the comments, say I want to do it, say yo-yo, whatever.
Say make Justin do it and
donate
it or something.
Easy Reader.
There we go. All right, cool.
Easy Read from Easy Reader.
All right, today's trivia is about the impressive comic book series All-Star Batman and Robin, The Boy Wonder, and a small nod to the legend David Harris, R.I.P. Cochise. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. What does Batman, who does Batman lure into a yellow trap? Is it A, Green Lantern? B, looks like Robert can play, but can he dunk? C, Bobby Duncan.
I love that. So much of your trivia work, Pete, when you're writing this, is about taking names and finding the nicknames of them.
Oh, yeah, man.
Like Robert to Bobby, as you're doing
here. It's almost like you like that better than the trivia. A, Easy Reader says.
That is correct. Here we go. Question number two. Once Green Lantern is in the trap, who steals his power ring? Is it A, Robin? B, Patty? How did you become such an ambassador for yourself? C, Patricia Brandkamp?
Say that one again.
Yeah.
I will not.
Oh, great.
Pete doesn't repeat. That's his whole thing. Yeah. Pete, no repeat.
That's right.
He's not repeat LePage. He's Pete LePage.
Easy Reader says A.
Again. A is correct. Here we go. Last one. The amazing artist on this project has also been dubbed the King of San Diego. Speaking of amazing memories, is it A, Jim Lee? B, it's Herbie Hancock. Duh. C, John Hancock.
Nice. Speaking of what you just said, Michael Tillman says he's wondering if Dick Whitening is going to make another appearance on the podcast. It's straight bullet. Pete, one time the page. Accurate. He's always one time.
A, is it A?
That is correct.
Wow.
$25 yours.
Times 18, right? Because it's the 18th anniversary, so you're going to get 18 times... I'm kidding. You're going to get $25 to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email. We'll get that off to you. Pete, what's the secret movie that you were referencing?
Of course, I'm talking about the 1984 classic, A Soldier's Story.
Sure.
I don't know that movie. I don't know this person. I don't know what agenda you're serving.
Wow. You don't know A Soldier's Story,
is this
bro?
A friend of yours that died?
Dude, are you serious? He was in the Warriors.
All right.
Okay. Why did you do that movie?
Warriors. I referenced it with the, you know.
Nobody knows that. Well, nobody has any idea. Real quick, I will just bring this up, even though it's not audience question time. All the game said, it is the Sons of a Gun podcast covering Creature Commandos. Yes, Sons of a Gun.
Hell yeah.
Will be. I don't know the exact schedule yet, but we will aim to get those up on a weekly basis. So there you go.
Soon.
As we all know, before that, though, new comic books are coming out. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out tomorrow? Pete?
Oh, man. So many great stuff. One I don't know how to pronounce, so I'm not going to try, but Birds of Prey number 16. I was really blown away by it.
Oh, you don't know how to pronounce X-Men?
Nope. That's not the one.
Mm-hmm. Is that
when
the one?
When you say you're blown away by, you mean you're excited to check it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Justin, what are you excited to check out?
Lots of stuff coming. Avengers number 21 by Jed McKay, my guy. We are starting to cross over a lot of the titles that he's working on. We have the X-Men appearing in this issue, I believe, and then I think the next issue features Black Cat. So I'm like, Jed McKay is slowly squaring the circle, which is just what I love to see. So very excited for that. And I feel bad shouting this out too many times, but Birds of Prey is just coming out tomorrow. And that book is just a delight every single time I get to hold it in my hands.
It's the one from Ahoy Comics.
Archaic.
That's it right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks interesting as well. Excited to check that out. Always interested to check out stuff coming up from Ahoy. A couple of things. I'll shout out Two-Face number one from DC Comics. Christian Ward wrote a killer Two-Face in Batman City of Madness. This is a mainline DC title, so I'm curious to see what he's going to do with that. Also, I don't know if excited, but trepidatious about this. Snot Girl number 16 is coming out from Image Comics. That's Brian Lee O'Malley's extremely weird title, so I'm curious to see.
Well, and I got to say, I was surprised because what's been the break in this? That's been
very
off
long,
the chart.
Very
for
long.
Like,
but it's back.
Literally,
so it'll
many
be interesting.
Years.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with it being
gone. I also want to say one more. Ultimates number 7, Dennis Camp, is absolutely crushing this book. I really, really love it.
Yep. There we go. And folks, that is it. That is it for our 18th. That is it. Goodbye. No, that's it for our 18th anniversary show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Jeff Johns and Ivan Rice for coming on to talk about Hyde Street. Hyde Street number 3 coming out January 22nd, 2025. Pick up the first two issues right now. Next week, we're going to have a packed show.
What?
Daniel Kibblesmith is going to be back to talk about the Powerpuff Girls Winter Snowdown Showdown. Also, yeah. Greg Pak is going to be here.
What?
I know. To talk about Sam Wilson, Captain America, and a bunch of other things. CRC Payne is going to be here to talk about Batman Wayne Family Adventures. So definitely come on back, y'all.
That is a
come on back. 18 more years. Come on.
Couple of people, not a couple of people, a couple of other things to plug. Couple of Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday. Check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Comic Book Club on Blue Sky. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. ComicBookClubLive.com for this
podcast. Yeah! Comic Book Club! My favorite. My favorite thing to shout out, Alex.
Until next time, and for the next 18 years, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
We're trapped. Help us.
I'm spry. I'm ready. It feels like starting over.
They're making me do this against my will.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.